Worn Out Plans. Written by Leverage Hunters, aka Monkey Green, and read by Devil with a Bird Dress. Summary. Steve had been the chosen one, called at 17 to defeat the power of the Dark God. He'd fulfilled his destiny, but victory, like always, was temporary. Another Dark One always rose, and another Chosen One was always called, an endless, ever-repeating cycle, like a book that would never stop being written. And, for some reason, decades later, the next chapter rode down his path. Author Notes. The title comes from Not So Far Away by Glenn Burtnick from the Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure soundtrack, the first CD I ever bought. When history repeats itself, they'll sell you their worn-out plan. Thank you, as always, to the ever-wonderful Albie Mangroves for both listening to me ramble and being endlessly encouraging. Ow! Dorothea, come on! Steve yanked his hand back, avoiding another strike from the annoyed chicken glaring at him from her nest box, and sat back on his heels. Do we have to do this every morning? Her cock-headed glare assured him that yes, they did, and he stuck the side of his hand in his mouth to suck on the minor wounds she'd managed to inflict. They'd heal in a few minutes, but it didn't make them any less annoying or him any more interested in getting blood on his clothes. Okay, then. I just wanted you to know you brought this on yourself. She croaked at him, a sound far too threatening to have emerged from a 2-foot-tall mop of black and brown feathers, and lunged, but he scooped her out of the nest box and shoved her under his arm. She squawked angrily and pecked at his shirt as he collected the eggs, placing them gently in his basket. They were a mix of colors, brown, white, pale green, and blue, since Dorothea managed to bully most of the other chickens into laying in this nest box so she could brood over all the eggs. Basket in one hand and Dorothea under one arm, Steve left the coop and opened the gate to the chicken run for the day, then gently set her down. She dug in the dirt like a bull about to charge, then turned and huffed her way to the other hens. Steve smiled as he watched her marshal them into a feathery little battalion and march them out the gate towards the apple trees, squawking at the rooster when he didn't get out of her way fast enough. Good thing the Dark One never recruited an army of chickens. I wouldn't have stood a chance. He laughed under his breath and went to take the eggs inside. By the time he walked into his cottage, his hand was completely healed. Break. Steve loved his cottage. It wasn't big, and it wasn't fancy, just 3 simple rooms, small enough to heat in winter, big enough to give him space, and it was his. It had been run down when he'd arrived, but he'd built it into something strong. He'd built it into home. Not alone, of course. The only thing the Temple of Light cared about was ensuring the Chosen One was good at killing people, and those skills weren't much help when it came to building anything. But he was stronger than normal folk. He could lift more, move more, healed fast, and he didn't tire easily. Steve had traded his strength and endurance for knowledge and skill. He rebuilt his cottage and learned what anyone would teach. How to work wood and soil and crops and livestock. He'd known how to ride a horse, but he learned to work with them, to understand them, to help make them better after others ruined them. He used his strength and new skills to help his neighbors and the town, to contribute and keep it safe, even if everyone agreed he was never again to help with shearing the sheep. He built his home and planted his garden, tended the apple trees that bordered his land, and fished the river that ran through the wild woods behind it. He cursed the deer and the foxes and built solid fences and strong walls to protect his garden and his chickens. He cursed the 2 late rains and the 2 early frosts and the 2 heavy snows, but through it all, the good and the bad, he found a peace he'd never thought to have. Until today. It had been years. It had been decades. Steve had been called at 17, was 18 when he'd killed the Dark One. Now, he was a few months shy of 43, his back hurt most mornings, although thankfully not for long, and his hair was going gray, the blonde slowly surrendering to encroaching silver strands. Maybe that was why the girl riding down the path from the road looked so young. Her shiny chestnut gelding was so bright he was almost gold, and even the horse looked too young. Steve straightened from his crouch in the garden, hands full of limp green plants whose only crime was not being the right kind of green, and watched her draw the gelding to a halt. At least she has soft hands. That's better than I managed at her age. She wore well-made leathers in shades of burgundy and green. Her gelding's tack dyed to match, and her red-brown skin glowed warm in the sunlight. Multiple tight black braids were pulled back and tied at the nape of her neck, and he recognized the sword peeking over her shoulder and the shield strapped to her saddle. Their twins were wrapped in oilcloth in the rafters of his cottage. The Temple of Light was nothing if not consistent. Steve had been called by the God of Light, the chosen one destined to defeat the Dark One. He'd fulfilled his destiny, but victory, like always, was temporary. Another Dark One always rose, another chosen one was always called, an endless, ever-repeating cycle, like a book that would never stop being written. And for some reason, the next chapter had just ridden down his path. She dismounted and led her gelding towards the garden fence. "Hello," she said politely. "I'm looking for Stephen." Steve tossed the weeds into the bucket. "You found him." He was wearing his oldest, rattiest clothes, patched in multiple places just to add to the charm, his hat a battered straw monstrosity missing a chunk from the brim, courtesy of one of Sam's horses, and he almost laughed at the doubt that flashed across her face. "I'm looking for a specific Stephen, one who used to..." She paused, clearly thinking, then said, "Work for the Temple of Light?" Steve had to smile at the phrasing. "Well," he said, walking over to lean on the garden fence, "I could lift your horse over my head as a demonstration that I'm the Stephen you're looking for, but I don't think it'd like that much. Or I could cut myself and we could watch how fast I heal, but I wouldn't like that much. So let's go with, you are called the Temple of Light because there's a new Dark One rising, and you're the chosen one that has to defeat them." She took several shocked steps backwards. "Am I pretty close?"
"You can't talk about it like that," she hissed, glancing around. "Just out loud like that."
Stephen suddenly felt very old. "Unless things have changed, a couple of hundred people watched you get anointed, and even if they didn't, there's no one around but me, your horse, the birds, and my chickens. And sure, Dorothea would join up with the Dark One in a heartbeat if she knew it was an option, but she doesn't, so I think we're safe."
"Who's Dorothea?"
she asked, sounding confused.
"One of my chickens. She's a strategic mastermind. Am I right?"
She nodded and bowed her head. "It's an honor to meet you, sir."
"Don't call me that, please.
Steve. My name's Steve. And you are?"
"I'm the Chosen One," she said cautiously, like she thought Steve might have forgotten.
If his hands hadn't been filthy with dirt, he'd have rubbed his forehead. He almost did it anyway.
"No," he said patiently. "What's your name?"
"Oh," she said, and the surprise in the single syllable hurt his heart.
"Breda. My name's Breda."
"Good to meet you, Breda," Steve said, and in an entirely unnecessary move, put one hand on top of the fence and hopped over all 6 feet of it. The gelding snorted suspiciously at him. "Let me get cleaned up, and we can have a chat about what you're doing here." Soon enough, they were settled at Steve's kitchen table with tea and a plate of sandwiches. The gelding, Sunshine, Breda had told him, his name is Sunshine, was untacked and tethered to the fence with a bucket of water.
"Go on," he waved at the plate. "I guess you've been traveling a while."
He sipped his tea and ate a sandwich while she made short work of one, then two, then he had to hide a smile when she started on a third.
"Want me to make more?"
She shook her head, swallowed the last of the sandwich, and said, "Sorry."
"Don't be sorry. You're hungry. They're there to be eaten. Want an apple? I have lots."
She shook her head again.
"Okay. Want to tell me why you're here?"
"Will you train me?" It came out all in a rush,
like if she didn't say it fast, Steve would stop her. He put down his tea. No, just listen, please. I had to beg the priest to let me come and ask. Please don't say no without at least listening.
He gestured at her to keep going, honestly too surprised to think of anything to say.
Talith trained you.
She did, he said, cautiously. Talith had been the chosen one before him. She'd had skin like rusted iron and a personality to match, and no one had been willing to fight her when she'd taken over Steve's training. His exception aside, chosen ones were trained by the temple guard. It was tradition.
Why do you want me to train you?
She took a deep breath. Talith was the fourth one called to kill that Dark One, and she did it, even though he had an army. She trained you, and you killed the Dark One even though he had all those guards and a whole town under his control. I want you to train me like she trained you, so no matter what I end up facing, I won't fail.
She was so young, earnest-voiced and earnest-eyed, and he remembered being her, freshly chosen and just as determined not to fail. That failing was dying hadn't been something he'd given much thought to back then. He doubted Breda had, either. He suddenly understood why Talith had been so ruthless, had driven him hard enough there'd been times he'd almost hated her. She hadn't been able to not do whatever it took to keep him alive.
Not this time. Not this one. You're not getting this one.
You won't fail, Steve promised.
Does that mean you'll train me?
Steve stood and poured his tepid tea down the sink, his back to her, while he said, I'll make sure there's no chance you'll fail against the Dark One. He heard Breda slump in the chair, her voice relieved as she said, Thank you. He nodded and turned around, leaning against the sink. I'm not set up for keeping horses here, but my neighbor's a horse trainer. Sunshine will need to stay with him. Her face fell, like he threatened to take away her only friend, which, he realized, he had, but she nodded gamely.
Okay. Don't worry. He'll be in good hands with Sam, and you can visit whenever you want. You might be seeing a lot of Sam, actually. More than she could imagine, given what Steve was planning. But he's good people.
She nodded again.
You can set yourself up in my back room. The couch is comfy. A little small, but so are you. He offered a quick smile, because the top of her head barely reached his shoulder, and she gave him a quick grin in return. So you'll suit each other. Why don't you get settled in while I take Sunshine to Sam's? If you'll be okay on your own?
This nod was firm, determined, like he'd set her a challenge.
I'll be back in a couple of hours, so help yourself to anything. Take a nap if you're tired, or there's a bookshelf in my room if you want to read. Oh, if you see a black chicken with a stripe of brown feathers down her back, watch out.
Is that Dorothea?
That's Dorothea. You'll be fine if you don't make eye contact.
When do we start training?
You just got here, Steve said gently. We can worry about that later, okay?
Okay.
Break.
Several times on the ride to Sam's, Sunshine tried to turn back. He was nice about it, extremely well-mannered and well-trained, but obviously convinced that Steve was making a mistake trying to take him away from Breda. The third time Steve gently corrected him, he let out a long, snorting sigh, clearly resigned to his fate, and didn't try again. Before long, they were trotting smoothly down the drive into Sam's sprawling property, past the main house and around the curve to the stables. Riding rings and round pens bisected by neat paths led to wood-fenced paddocks, with rolling pasture visible in the distance. Several people waved or nodded as Steve rode past, but he was well-known and welcome, so no one stopped him, and he kept going at an easy walk until he spotted Sam leaning on a round pen. He stopped far enough away he wouldn't distract the snorty gray mare being worked in the pen, but Sam turned, and even from this distance, Steve saw his eyes light up. He spoke briefly to the woman in the pen, then made his way over to Steve.
"Did you bring me a present?" he asked, offering the flat of his palm to Sunshine.
"I brought you a favor."
He dismounted while the gelding lipped at Sam's fingers, then shoved his head into Sam's chest. "Bring me more favors like this, and I'd be happier to see you," he replied with a grin, scratching the gelding's forehead.
Steve rolled his eyes a little as he ran up the stirrups. His name's Sunshine.
Suits him.
Yeah. Can he stay with you for... He had to pause, because he had no idea how long he'd be gone, or if he'd ever come back. He took a deep breath, steeling himself for the conversation he was about to have, for the lies he'd need to tell. Honestly, I have no idea. It's going to be a while, and I can't keep him at my place. Sam gave him an odd look, but all he said was, "Damn right you can't. He deserves better than being shoved in a chicken coop. Plus, Dorothea would eat him, or recruit him." "There is that. Are you going to tell me why you have a horse that needs to stay with me? I'm assuming he came with a person."
"I have a guest, I guess. She'll be staying a while, too."
Sam lifted both eyebrows. "Can we get him settled? Then I need to talk to you. In private."
"Sure thing."
Once Sunshine was happily munching hay in a stall, Sam led Steve into the tack room and locked the door, gesturing at him to sit. It was quiet and warm, the air rich with the smell of leather and horse, and Steve lowered himself onto a wobbly wooden chair with a sigh.
"What's on your mind, Steve?" Sam asked as he grabbed a bucket, turned it over, and sat on it.
"I need a favor."
"Something bigger than the horse, I'm guessing."
"Yeah." He dragged his hand through his hair and chose his words carefully. "I've got this girl staying with me, name of Breda. She just arrived today, but I've got to go away, and I'm not sure when I'll be back. Could you look in on her, make sure she's okay? Or, if you've got room, could you bring her over here to help out and teach her some things? She's got soft hands, and she loves her horse, which seems to be mutual, so I think she could be good at what you do." He glanced up at Sam, who only nodded, but it was clear that questions were coming. "I don't feel right asking her to look after my place, so could one of your stable kids come over and feed the chickens, collect the eggs, water the garden, check the fences, that kind of thing? I'll pay them, of course, whatever you think is fair."
"None of that should be a problem," Sam said, slowly. "But I'm stuck on two things. You having a guest you want me to look after, and you going away, especially the part where those are happening at the same time. You don't have guests, and if you ever did have one, you wouldn't up and abandon them.
Steve, what's going on?" He opened his mouth, ready to spin a story, and found he couldn't.
"Nothing."
Sam hummed doubtfully. "How are you getting wherever you're going away to?"
"Take public coaches as far as I can, walk the rest of the way."
"So you are going somewhere specific?"
Steve shrugged.
"You should take Rabbit."
"What? No."
Rabbit was one of Sam's best horses, a chestnut mare as fiery as her coat, smart, fast, and utterly fearless. Steve could not take her.
"I can't take Rabbit."
"Of course you can. You know her, she knows you. More importantly, she trusts you. I can't think of a better match."
"No, Sam, I can't."
There was a moment of silence, the eternally short seconds between stepping in a trap and the jaws slamming closed, before Sam asked, "And why is that?" Steve couldn't lie to him. Sam was the closest he had to family, and Steve could not lie to him.
"Because I might not come back."
"Might not come back, or you might not be able to come back." He looked away.
"I might not make it back."
"Tell me what's going on." Sam's voice was low and dangerous. "Who's in your house, Steve?" It was easy to forget how deadly Sam was, to forget his life before this had been anything but peaceful. But right now, it was staring Steve in the face. He rushed to say, "It's not like that, Sam. I swear. She's not a threat." He breathed out, breathed in, decided. "I'm the chosen one, and I'm going to kill the Dark One." He couldn't help a huff of wry laughter as he added, "Again." Sam narrowed his eyes.
"Again?"
Steve just looked at him, then smiled.
"You know, I really thought it'd be the chosen one bit that'd throw you."
"Nah, I've known about that for years." Steve blinked and Sam laughed at him. I mean, not that specifically, but that you were something. Ordinary people can't do what you do. They can't carry what you can, they can't lift what you can, or do hard labor all day without taking a break. Most people don't pay enough attention to notice, so I don't think anyone else figured it out. He reached out and tugged at Steve's hair. It helps that you went as gray as the rest of us. I think it throws people off the scent. But I knew something was up. Oh. Sam's smile was gentle. I never cared before. It faded. I'm starting to care now. Okay, you're the chosen one. I know about them, the Temple of Light's chosen ones that get called to kill the Dark Ones. You killed the Dark One. What do you mean you're going to kill him again? The new chosen one. That's who's in my house. She wants me to train her. Okay, he frowned. That's strange, right? Yeah, it is. I don't know how she convinced the priests to let her go. But she did, and now she's here. Sam gave him a shrewd look. Why does she want you to train her? Because I was trained by the chosen one that came before me. It was still at the temple, but she lived there, and she insisted on training me. Breda, the new chosen one, heard about it, decided she wants the same thing, and showed up asking me to train her. Steve rubbed a hand over his face. Because she doesn't want to fail. What did you tell her? Sam asked gently. That I'd make sure she didn't fail. And I will. Steve stared at his hands. Sam, she can't be more than 16. She's a kid. That's who the god calls. The god calls kids, and those kids get sent to war. That's what fighting the Dark One is. It's a damned war, whether they've got an army or not. But not this time. This time, there's a choice. This time, there's me. And I'm going. All right, Steve. It was soft, filling the ringing silence Steve's words left in their wake. Take Rabbit. No, I'm not hearing it, he said as Steve started to protest. You'll have a better chance with her. If neither of you come home, then so be it. He clasped Steve's shoulders tightly in both hands and gave him a shake. But I'm not letting you go without the best chance of coming home. It was fierce, implacable, and all Steve could do was nod. Break. Early the next morning, while the night was still dreaming of the dawn, Steve walked up the road to meet Sam. He'd packed and left without waking Breda. Sam would ride over and explain things later. Steve knew there was a good chance she wouldn't forgive him, but he had faith in Sam's ability to keep her from following. Sam was waiting, mounted on a dun gelding and leading Rabbit, who pricked her ears forward when she saw him. Steve strapped his covered shield and saddlebags to Rabbit's saddle and mounted, the weight of the sword on his back strange and too familiar, all at once. Sam regarded him solemnly. Come back. I'll try. They clasped hands, squeezing hard. Then Sam's dun tossed his head, Rabbit laid her ears back. Steve reined her away before she could bite Sam's gelding, and it was time to go. He didn't look back. Break. There was no convenient map inscribed with, "Here be the Dark One," not that it was needed most times. Most times, the path to the Dark One was carved in blood. But Steve didn't need one. Finding the Dark One was part of what he was. Listen just right for a discordant note, the sound of shattered bone dragging across granite, and it would lead you where you needed to go. Eventually, Steve realized he didn't need the note. He knew where he was going. Last time, he'd camped stealthily in forests and caves and ditches, sleeping on leaves and eating what he could catch. This time, he and Rabbit stayed at inns. They weren't living in the lap of luxury, but she had a stable at best and a lean-to at worst, and more than the scrub she could crop overnight. He had four walls, a roof, something better than the ground to sleep on, and warm food, even if it was sometimes best not to ask what the food had started life as. But he knew where he was going. Unless the discordant note suddenly veered wildly, was leading him to the same stone keep where he'd killed the last Dark One. Which he didn't understand. Dark Ones weren't like mushrooms, exploding in a puff of spores, new Dark Ones sprouting in the vicinity of the last. Maybe the new one had just decided to move into what was probably an abandoned keep, but it was worrying. "Did I fail after all?" he asked Rabbit, who twitched her ears back at the sound of his voice. There was no one else on the narrow road to wonder why he was talking to his horse. "If I am going to the same place, and I don't think there's any doubt at this point, maybe he's still alive." It was a horrifying thought. Maybe he was only wounded. He frowned, and Rabbit flattened her ears. "But I cut his head off. I cut his head off, and I burned the body. How does someone come back from that?" One ear flicked out. "I know, they don't. Unless it wasn't him." Steve had no doubts. It had been him. But even if he had somehow sent someone else to get killed in his place, there's no way he'd have been living quietly for the past couple of decades. Evil doesn't just stop being evil. Not that kind of evil. Rabbit heaved a sigh, and Steve leaned forward to pat her neck. "Sorry, girl. Enough evil talk. Let's find somewhere to spend the night." He nudged her into a canter. "We'll be there soon enough." Break. Steve had lied to Rabbit. There was no we. He left her safely stabled at a traveler's inn just outside the town closest to the keep, one reputable enough she'd be cared for if he never came back, and continued on foot. Last time he'd seen it, this town had been completely under the fist of the Dark One, the buildings half-burned, garbage and corpses rotting in the streets, the townsfolk broken down past terror. Now, it was good to see it looking so prosperous, the sounds of a cheerful, bustling marketplace following him as he put town and memories behind him. He left the road as soon as he could, making his uneven way into the woods. They were wilder than they'd been, the trees taller, the brambles thicker, unwelcoming and untamed, but careful tracking found the hint of a path. It was more than a deer trail, but not by much. It led, eventually, to a sound. The thock, thock, thock of someone chopping wood. Steve stealthily followed the sound to a clearing that butted up against the brutal stone keep where he'd killed the Dark One. It had seen better days, half of it nothing but vine-wrapped tumbled stone, and it seemed to be abandoned. There was no signs of guards or servants, just a man chopping wood. He was as tall as Steve, broad-shouldered and strong, given the easy way he swung the heavy axe, his long dark hair liberally streaked with gray and pulled back into a messy tail. His cream-colored shirt was dry, no sign he was sweating from his efforts, and his dark pants fit him well enough that Steve could see the strength of his thighs. With a last thock, split logs tumbling into the grass, the man turned, scanning the forest and giving Steve, crouching concealed in the trees, a clear view of a left arm that gleamed like metal, and eyes that were black from edge to edge. This was the Dark One. Not the one Steve had killed, but with those eyes, he could be nothing else. As Steve watched, tense, alert, ready to draw sword and shield, ready to fight, the Dark One set the axe down, wiped his hands in his pants, then folded his arms across his chest. "Do you want some lunch, or are you going to lurk in the woods all day?" Steve sat back on his heels and frowned. There'd been nothing threatening or challenging in his words. If anything, he sounded vaguely annoyed, like Steve had committed some social faux pas. "There's deer stew and fresh-baked bread." After a moment's hesitation, a million possibilities pinging in his head like a herd of startled colts, he stood. "I could eat." "Come on, then." Steve made his way out of the trees and followed him. Followed him, and it would have been easy to sink a knife into his back and end it then and there. He didn't. Not from any compunction about striking from behind. Surviving the Dark One meant fighting to survive. But because no Dark One would ever turn their back on a stranger. Except he had. It was a contradiction Steve couldn't resolve in the time it took to reach the wooden door into the keep. It opened into a long room that was doing dual duty as kitchen and living quarters. The far end held a bed, several wooden chests, bookshelves, and a desk covered in papers, ink, pens. The end Steve had just walked into was the kitchen, warmth and impossibly good smells drifting from the cast-iron stove. "Help yourself. Stew in the pot, bowls on the left, bread under the cover, butter in the bowl, cutlery in the drawer." The Dark One pointed at each in turn. "I won't serve you. That way you don't have to worry about poison," he said wryly, then served himself and sat at the small table, pointedly taking a bite of stew. Steve snorted, but collected his food and leaned against the counter to eat, suddenly overwhelmed with hunger. "Good?" "Better than good," Steve replied. "You made it?" "There's no one else here." It fit with what Steve had seen. "Are you going to kill me?" The Dark One didn't seem concerned, mopping up deer stew with a bit of bread. "That's why you're here, right? Chosen one?" He lifted his head and fixed Steve with his pitch-black eyes. Steve suppressed a shudder. "What makes you so sure I'm the chosen one?" It got him an eye roll, and he went back to his stew. "The power I carry means most of the time I can see magic, and you glow gold. You're here with your shiny shield and your shiny sword that have the Temple of Light written all over them. Given what happened a few months ago, I've been half expecting, well, not you, but someone to show up eventually." The corner of his mouth tipped up. "And even with the crow's feet and the gray hair and a couple of decades gone past, I recognize you." Steve stared at him. "You recognize me?" He glanced up, expressionless, his black eyes deep and unfathomable. "I was here when you killed the last Dark One." Steve took a step forward. "Who are you?" "You know who I am. I'm the Dark One, the vessel of the Dark God's powers, the enemy of civilization, evil incarnate, destined to die at the hands of the Chosen One." His face was blank, but the emotion in his words battered Steve like torrential rain, pounding down on him until he was drowning in it. There was no hiding the truth of his eyes. This man held the Dark God's powers. But the rest... Steve unbuckled his shield and set it on the floor. Did the same with his sword. Sat at the table across from the man who was the Dark One, who followed his every move like he didn't know which of them was predator and which was prey. "Steve. I'm Steve. I live in a cottage that I helped rebuild with my own hands. I have apple trees and chickens and a garden that wants to be weeds. Who are you?" For a long few minutes, nothing but silence came from the other side of the table. It was followed by a shuddering sigh, pain and weariness and something deeper, something Steve couldn't name but felt echo inside himself. "I used to be James, or Bucky. My family called me Bucky. I was a student, studying history at the university. The Dark One was making history, so he took me to be his witness. He ripped my arm apart and changed it so I'd understand his power. Now, I'm nothing but this." He touched the corner of his eye. Steve slid his hand across the table and pressed his knuckles against James's fingers, who startled so badly the table rattled. "James." He gave Steve a spooked look, so Steve wrapped his fingers around his hand. "James," he said again, firmer. "Unless Bucky is better?" "I don't know." "James, then, unless you tell me otherwise." "Aren't you supposed to be killing me?" "Chosen one," he pointed at Steve. "Dark one," he pointed at himself. "Not holding my hand?" Steve shrugged, and James laughed. It was rusty, like he hadn't in a while, but it was unmistakably a laugh, and Steve let go of his hand and sat back. "I already killed the Dark One. I figure it's up to me what I do now." "In that case, I'm glad it was you who showed up." He stood and carried his dishes to the sink. "You finished eating?" "For now." "Grab some wood for the stove while I wash up?" "Sure." Steve took the opportunity for a quick scout around the outside of the keep. He found nothing but a shed piled high with firewood, an old empty stable, a sprawl of vine-covered stones tumbling out of the keep, and not much else. He gathered the wood James had chopped, added it to the stacks in the shed, then grabbed an armful. He paused in the doorway to wipe his boots, and out of the blue it hit him just how vulnerable he was. Arms full, no real weapons, he'd be so easy to kill. Everything James had told him, everything James had let him see, even James. Evil lied. It lied with a pretty face and a sad story, and he let his guard down and... Steve. His name was low and quiet. James was sitting at the table with a teapot and two mugs, watching him cautiously out of those black eyes. Steve? No, he let out a breath. No. Tell me where you want these? Box for the firewood is back behind the stove. Steve stowed it, added some wood to the fire, then joined James at the table. Tea? He pushed the pot towards Steve. Thanks. He filled both their mugs and took one, taking a deep sip, the flavor strong and smoky. Can I ask you something? Maybe. Depends on what you want to know. How did you end up with the power? He couldn't believe James had summoned it, at least not willingly. Did the Dark One I killed do something to you, to make it jump to you when he died? Or was it because of what he did to your arm, or... He stopped, because James had gone very still. Very precisely, like it might shatter if he didn't do it correctly, he set his mug down. Is this a test? Completely confused, Steve said. What? Is this a test? Are you testing me to see if I'll tell you the truth? Were you sent here? No one sent me. He'd gone very wrong somehow, veered into dangerous waters without realizing he'd left the land. This isn't a test. I can tell you about being called, what it was like to be chosen, if you want. I know it's not the same, but it was all he had to offer. James's eyes were as blank and smooth as an obsidian blade as he studied Steve. You're asking because you don't know. Steve huffed out a breath. Why else would I be asking? Something in the humorless curl of James's mouth told Steve he could think of a few other reasons, but all he did was pick up his mug. Why don't you tell me the story? Stubbornness made him say, what story? Even though he knew. The story. Our story. The story of the Dark God and the God of Light. Tell me the one the priests told you. Why? Because I'd like to hear it. With a sigh, Steve slumped in his chair. All right. The God of Light was the Dark God's younger sibling, but as they grew, the Dark God realized the God of Light was more powerful. The Dark God didn't think that was fair. They were older. That meant they should have the most power. So they decided to steal some of the God of Light's power for themselves. Not all of it. Just enough so they'd have the most. But like most things to do with gods stealing from gods, it went wrong, and trying to mix another god's power into their own went about as well as trying to shove two strange cats into a bag. Steve thought James was trying not to smile. You're telling me the priests of the Temple of Light said that? That it was like trying to shove two strange cats into a bag? No, but that was the gist of it, and it's been a long time. I don't remember their exact words. Does it matter? I guess not. Can I finish? James waved at him to continue. The Dark God fought to keep what they'd stolen, and they succeeded, but some of their own power was expelled in the struggle, and it fell into our world. Once it was here, no god could retrieve it or destroy it, since they can't interfere directly. Someone eventually found a way to use the power. He caused the Quellan Massacre, and that was when the God of Light gave an acolyte of the Church of Bright Dawn the power to fight the wielder of the Dark God's power. The first chosen one, the first Dark One. She killed him, the Church of Bright Dawn became the Temple of Light, and the rest is history. James sat back. The version I know is basically the same. I think they're all basically the same. I know one where the gods are spouses, not siblings, and one where they're both. James huffed, sounding amused. They're gods. It wouldn't be that surprising. Okay, Now the important question. Why are you here?
The new chosen one is 16, and she loves her horse, and I don't care what the gods say. You don't send kids to fight if there's another choice.
He eyed James.
You said you were expecting me, or someone like me. Why?
Because a few months ago, I killed a man.
Steve sat with it for a bit.
Why did you kill him?
Because he knew what I was when he saw my eyes. And that's when I knew he'd try and kill me. I wasn't expecting him to want to talk first, but he was thrilled to have someone to share his stories with. Someone who'd understand.
There was a bitter twist on the last word, so biting, so pained, it sent a metallic pulse down Steve's spine.
I take it these weren't happy stories.
He thought they were. He was proud of the things he'd done to people, proud of what he was going to do once he had more power. He'd come looking for books, magical artifacts, things that had belonged to the last Dark One. When he found me, he thought he'd get to be the Dark One instead. He was wrong.
James's eyes were hard, the unnatural black glinting like a warning, but all Steve could see was someone who'd done what hadn't come easy when it had needed to be done. He slid his hand across the table and nudged his fingers against James's. He jumped a little, blinked down at Steve's hand, and his gaze softened.
You think he was when the new chosen one was called? Steve asked.
I don't know, but the power, it has a way of reaching out to someone that suits it better. The Dark One you killed, he collected notes about it, research, books, some in languages I can't read, a few I don't even recognize. But from what I've put together, it can't jump into someone else, but it can tempt. I think that's what it was doing, reaching out, tempting him. Maybe that was enough.
Maybe. If he'd killed you, would he have been the new Dark One?
He thought so. Tell me the rest of it. Why did the new Chosen One come to you?
Steve sighed impatiently, because that wasn't an answer.
She wanted me to train her.
Why?
Because she thought it would give her a better chance.
James didn't say why again, but his expression was clear enough.
I was trained by the Chosen One that came before me. The new Chosen One heard the story and decided I was her best bet to succeed.
Steve met James's eyes.
She was right.
Just not how she thought.
No. Talith, the Chosen One who trained me, she hated the temple. She loathed the priests. But she waited for me, waited for the next Chosen One, so she could make sure I survived. She was the fourth called to fight that Dark One. The three before her died. Only Talith made it back. And then she made sure I survived. That's why I'm here, to make sure the new Chosen One survives.
He added softly, I didn't expect you.
James stood, paced around the room, and returned to lean on the back of his chair, staring at Steve, expression impossible to parse.
You really don't know?
They were back where they'd started, but at least this time it was a genuine question. Steve didn't know whether to be happy his patience might finally be rewarded, or throw his hands up in frustration. He settled for a flat,
I really don't know lots of things, James. You're gonna need to be more specific.
I'm about to be.
He walked to his bed, dropped to his knees, and pulled out a cloth-wrapped bundle, then stood facing Steve, holding it out in his arms. It was pleading and warning both when he said,
Please don't make me regret it.
And unfolded it to reveal a fist-sized chunk of rough-hewn black crystal. He set it on the edge of the table. It set Steve's teeth on edge just to look at it.
What is it?
You really don't know, James whispered, half awed, half angry, but Steve's heart was beating faster, each thump warning him that maybe he did know, that maybe he should have known long before this moment.
I just call it the rock. But I think it's what fell to the world. It's where the power comes from. It's where it goes when the person with the power is killed. When you killed the last Dark One, the power went back into the rock, and I grabbed it before anyone else could.
Why? Steve pushed to his feet and walked away from the table and the rock to pace between the door and the table.
He needed distance. He needed to move.
Why did you take it? Why become this?
Because I thought I could protect myself. And I was wrong. He wrapped his arms around himself, voice distant.
It was chaos. You were tearing through the guards. Everyone was panicking, grabbing what they could and running, or just running. A handful of people knew what it was, but most of them were fighting you.
I wasn't. I thought I could hide with it, keep it safe, figure out what to do later. I thought I was smart. I had a pair of blacksmith gloves, but they didn't matter. I was holding it when you killed him, and that was it.
And then you stayed here?
I couldn't leave. I knew how dangerous the power was. I'd heard him talk about it enough, read enough of his research. I'd seen it. I'd felt it. He lifted his metal hand. I couldn't take the chance someone would kill me and take the rock, and then the power would be out there in the world again, and someone who'd use it.
Steve leaned on the door.
You've been alone all this time.
Not completely. I wasn't the only one he took, and after you killed him, some of the others settled in town. When they came back to loot the keep, they found me like this. They were afraid, but I gave them most of the money and whatever they wanted that was worth anything and wasn't dangerous. And they trade with me, even after all these years, even though they're scared. So I'm not totally on my own.
Steve tipped his head back against the door and closed his eyes, because that wasn't much better than alone. All the time he'd spent building a home, building a life, finding a place, James had been on his own, holding the Dark God's power at bay.
It has to end.
We can't take the rock to the temple. I didn't know about it. I don't think any chosen one has ever known. But if the priests knew and kept it from us, if they knew and did nothing... Anger flared, but he forced it down. It wouldn't help. Not now. Not when they didn't know. And if they do know and can't stop it, or they just never knew, they're in as much danger from it as anyone. James sank wearily into a chair.
This thing, it takes you if you touch it. It calls you if you're near it. It wants a living vessel, and I'll die sooner or later. Sooner if someone kills me and takes the rock. Then there's a new dark one, a real dark one. Imagine it was someone with the power of the temple behind them.
His black eyes bored into Steve. But even if they didn't know it existed, even if it somehow went perfectly when you handed it over, do you really think they'd stop? His words struck Steve like an avalanche, carrying him 1,000 miles and decades away, and he was 17 years old, standing in a pool of golden light. The air was filled with the murmur of the hundreds who'd made their pilgrimage to witness his anointing. There were cool tiles under his bare feet, their pattern worn away by the tread of chosen ones who'd gone before.
How many?
The priests draped him with ritual robes and murmured ritual words, and how many had gone before him? How many would come after? They were the temple's power, and would never, ever give them up.
No.
Steve couldn't remember why he'd thought James's eyes were disturbing, not when they were deep enough to fall into, warm with understanding.
Can we destroy it?
I tried once. It didn't go well. Didn't go well, nothing happened, or didn't go well, worse than that. James grimaced. I think I almost died, and I didn't even hit it. I wasn't all that worried about the dying part. Steve gave him a sharp look. I'm not suicidal. The last thing in the world I am is suicidal. I can't afford to be. But on the scale of destroying that, he pointed at the rock, dying's not that big a deal. I didn't try again, because what if it did kill me and then it was just sitting here, waiting to be picked up by whoever came by? All right. I think that means it's my turn. I'm the chosen one, after all. Maybe I was chosen for this. He chuckled softly. I figured there was a decent chance I wasn't going to make it home.
No!
I don't think you can stop me. James snatched up the rock in his metal hand and held it behind his back. I think I can. Steve pushed off the door.
You said it yourself. On the scale of destroying that, dying's not that big a deal.
Suddenly it's different when it's me.
Yes!
He stopped.
Why? Why? James laughed. Because you have a cottage and apple trees and chickens and you came here to protect someone you don't even know. You can't just say, oh, I figured I wasn't going to make it home. Are you stupid?
The way James backed himself into a corner made something hurt in the vicinity of Steve's heart. You've stayed alone in this place, keeping the Dark God's power under control for decades so it couldn't hurt anyone. James's eyes went wide, the black gleaming, as Steve slowly closed the distance between them. You stopped the next Dark One before they could happen. Slow, careful, ready to pull away, he reached out and cupped James's cheek. You don't have a cottage or apple trees or chickens because you sacrificed them to protect everyone. He gently tugged James forward, pulling him into a hug. You're just as important as me. More important. There's already another chosen one. James was stiff, almost vibrating with tension. Then he tossed the rock to clunk onto a bench and wrapped his arms around Steve, burrowing in. Steve held him tight, trying to gather him closer, even though he knew it wasn't possible. James, he said softly, running a hand slowly up and down his back. Bucky. It was muffled, spoken into his shoulder. Bucky, Steve repeated, curling his fingers into his hair. I have to try. I know. I know. His hands fisted in the back of Steve's shirt. I don't have to like it. Steve kissed the top of his head. Show me what we're working with. What they were working with, Steve discovered after following Bucky up a half-crumbled set of stone stairs into a mostly intact room, was a slab of fallen stone that had split in half, and a warhammer nearly as tall as Steve. I jammed the rock in the crack between two halves of the slab. I tried to hit it with the big hammer. I got blown across the room before it made contact. I woke up a couple of days later, and the rock was the same. Okay. Either it can protect itself from you, or it can protect itself from being hit. Only one way to find out. If it doesn't work, we'll figure out something else to try. If it kills me... Steve ran through possible contingencies, realized he'd owe Sam all the apologies in the world for dragging him into this, then comforted himself with the knowledge that he'd be dead and safely out of shouting range if what he was planning turned out to be necessary. Can I use your desk? Help yourself. They traipsed back down to the kitchen room, and Steve sat at Bucky's desk, pulling out blank papers and a pen while Bucky cleared away the teapot and their mugs. Time passed, Steve aware of Bucky moving around the room, feeding more wood into the fire, setting a mug of water on the desk's shelf, safely out of the way, and resting a hand on Steve's shoulder before settling at the table. When he was finally finished, the water absently half-drunk, Steve called Bucky over. These are letters, he said, holding up two folded pieces of paper. Can you give them to one of the people you trade with to deliver? Bucky nodded, looking a little confused and a lot wary. Okay, this one's for the Traveler's Inn just outside town. He set it down. My horse and my things are there. This will give them to you. The horse isn't mine, so she's only temporary, but I want you to have her until my friend Sam comes for her. Her name's Rabbit, and you're going to suit each other. She's a good horse, and having her here means you won't be alone. What? Wait. This one's for Sam. He set it on top of the first. The rock needs to be destroyed or neutralized, and if this doesn't work, you're going to need help. Sam is the best person I know, and one of the smartest I've ever met. I trust him with you, and you can trust him. This letter is asking him and the new chosen one to come to you. It explains some things, but I was pretty circumspect. So this one, he tapped a third piece of paper that was sitting on the desk, explains in more detail. You can give it to him when he gets here. Steve, Bucky said, helplessly. Bucky. Steve caught both his hands and pulled him forward until he was standing between Steve's knees. I think this is what I'm for. I think this is what we've always been for. But if I'm wrong, and I die, I want to die knowing you won't be facing this alone. Why? Bucky yanked his right hand free and grabbed Steve's chin, the violence of it completely at odds with the gentle way his fingers curled against Steve's skin. Why do you care so much? Because I'm the chosen one. The whole reason I exist is to protect people from the power of the Dark God, and you need protecting from it more than anyone. He wondered if Bucky could see the affection bubbling up inside him, filling him up, overflowing into something impossibly deep and warm. It felt like magic, and Bucky had said he could see magic. "It's just a little more difficult with you, since you're carrying it around inside you." Bucky laughed wetly. "The other reason..." Steve stood, sending Bucky stumbling back a few steps, but Steve caught him, pulled him back, pulled him close. "Is you. Just you. That's enough." He tipped his forehead to rest against Bucky's. "But this is going to be fine. Worst case, I get knocked out for a couple of days. You'll take care of me. You can even say I told you so when I wake up, and we think of something else." "I'll never stop saying I told you so. I'll be saying I told you so in this." He caught a lock of Steve's still blonde hair between two metal fingers and tugged gently. "Is completely gone, and your whole head is gray." Steve caught his metal hand, brought it to his mouth, and kissed the tips of his fingers. "I'll deserve it." Bucky growled under his breath, entire face a scowl, but his black eyes were gleaming bright, and he blinked several times as he turned away. They returned to the room, and it was just as they'd left it. Split stone slab in the middle, Warhammer leaning against the wall. Not surprising, given how little time had passed. Bucky wedged the rock into the crack in the split stone, wiggling it in tight until removing it would probably require dousing it in oil, and turned to face Steve. "Are you sure?" "Yes." It was rising through his bones, certain as the tides. Bucky silently crossed the room, caught Steve's face between his hands, and kissed him. Just once, soft and quiet. Then he turned and left. Steve watched him go, listened to his footsteps recede down the half-crumbled stone steps, and when only silence remained, he hefted the hammer. He shifted his grip on the rough wood, and the room wavered as memory rose. He could feel his fingers digging into the smoke-stained red brick wall as he struggled to stay on his feet, the sounds of the city muffled and silent as an impossible golden presence burned through him, calling him, choosing him. There had never been a question, gods didn't ask, but it had brought him here, to this place, to this moment. Whatever happened, he had no regrets. He swung the hammer, the rock shattered, and an explosion of light blew him off his feet. He just had time to fling the hammer away before he hit the wall, and everything went dark. Break. "Steve! Steve, wake up! Steve, if you don't wake up, I swear I'm gonna..." Steve never found out what Bucky was going to do, because he opened his eyes. His back hurt, his arms hurt, his head hurt, but none of that mattered, because Bucky was crouched over him, hands on his chest, gently shaking him. And there was something he had to say. "Bucky." He lifted a hand, brushed a thumb over Bucky's cheek. "Your eyes are a storm." Bucky frowned and slid his right hand into Steve's hair, gently feeling along his scalp. Steve sputtered a laugh. "I didn't hit my head." He might have hit his head. "They are. They changed. They're not black anymore. They're blue-gray. It's not my fault you have eyes that look like a storm." Bucky's hand stilled, and his eyes darted to Steve's. He swallowed hard, then gave a shaky smile. "It's not. Remind me again which of us hit the rock with a big hammer?" "Okay, you got me. It is my fault." He sat back on his heels and touched the corner of his eye. "Are they really?" "They really are. They're beautiful. If I'm being completely honest, I thought they were pretty nice before. It might be..." He waved a finger in the air, gesturing at all of Bucky. "More you than the color of your eyes." Bucky laughed and tipped forward to rest his forehead on Steve's chest. "Let's get you off the floor." He stood and pulled Steve to his feet. Steve staggered, would have fallen if Bucky hadn't braced him while he caught his balance. He ached, back, shoulders, arms, knees, and it wasn't going away. Experimentally, he lifted the hammer. It was heavier than it had been, and he knew he wouldn't be able to swing it over his head if he was stupid enough to try. He let it drop, and it hit the floor with a clunk. "I don't think I'm the chosen one anymore." Bucky crouched in the middle of the room and scooped up a handful of gray dust that had once been a split slab of stone. "I think it's over," he whispered, opening his fingers and letting the dust fall. Anger was waiting. Steve could feel it, crouching like a patient predator, poised to strike. Anger, fury, at the endless, needless cycle of death any of them could have ended if only they'd known. But that could come later. Right now, all that mattered was that it was over, that it was done. That Bucky, who'd given as much, sacrificed as much, as any of them, was finally free. Steve crouched next to him, ignoring the new and exciting ways his body protested. "Bucky?" He looked up from the floor. "Can I offer you a cottage and some chickens and some apple trees?" Bucky blinked at him, the clear blue-gray easy to read when Steve had started to understand the black. He watched confusion give way to understanding, give way to something warm and bright that matched the feelings bubbling up in Steve. "I like gardens, or at least I like what comes out of them. I've never tried gardening. I like apples. I'm not sure how I feel about chickens." "You'll like them. Most of them," he said, wincing slightly. "Dorothea is an acquired taste." Bucky laughed quietly, then caught Steve's chin in his metal hand and kissed him softly. "I like you." Steve returned the kiss, hands resting on Bucky's knees. "Does that mean you'll come home with me?" "Yeah, Steve. Take me home." And Steve did. A short epilogue. Steve was eventually forgiven for leaving Breda behind, especially after he introduced her to Bucky and she learned everything they knew. When Sam offered her an apprenticeship, she decided to stay. Neither she nor Steve sent word to the temple, and when the priests arrived to check on her progress, they were informed that the Dark God's power had been permanently dealt with, no need to worry now or ever again. The priests seemed less than thrilled, but both former chosen ones were left in peace. When Steve's back hurt in the mornings, it took more than a few minutes to stop. He had to remember to take breaks when he was working, and when he hurt himself, it took time to heal. But in a strange way, he enjoyed it. It meant there were no more chosen ones. It meant the world didn't need them anymore. It meant it was over. Breda hadn't had the gifts as long as Steve, but he caught her eyes sometimes when they were clustered around Sam's table after a long day of hauling hay, and knew she felt the same. Steve and Bucky married in a quiet ceremony under the apple trees, a few years after Steve brought him home and gave him a home, and they made it their home, together. Steve's hair was completely silver by then, and Bucky's was well on its way, only a few streaks of chestnut brown left. Steve had never been happier than in that moment, standing in the scent of apple blossoms and the hum of bees, hand in hand with Bucky as they joined themselves together. Bucky found joy and peace and purpose, the back room of the cottage filling with paper and notes and everything he'd brought back from the keep as he assembled the history of their story, digging for the truth. Steve took a gamble and sent messages to old possibilities he remembered from his youth, hoping they might reach Talith, hoping she was still alive. If she was alive, Bucky's work was something he knew she'd want to be part of. A few decades later, the Temple of Light attempted to fake a new chosen one, but Breda, now well-known and well-loved among the nobility for training the finest warhorses in the country, exposed them with the help of Steve and Bucky. The temple schismed, the new Church of the Dawn denounced the corruption of the Temple of Light, and the Cathedral of Light, for centuries the destination of pilgrimages to witness the chosen ones being anointed, burned to the ground. Soon after the fire, Talith, white-haired, sharp-eyed, and lean as a greyhound, arrived at the cottage Steve and Bucky called home, and Steve suspected, but never, ever asked, that he knew why the cathedral burned. End. Thank you for listening, and I hope you're all doing all right.